Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I didn't mean to treat you so bad.
Bob Dylan was awarded the Nobel Prize in Literature today. He is the first winner to have forged a career primarily as a singer-songwriter and the first American to win in literature since Toni Morrison in 1993.
You're supposed to do. Sooner or later, one of us must know that I really did try to get close to you.
This track is One of Us Must Know from Dylan's 1966 album Blonde on Blonde. Sora Danius, permanent secretary of the Swedish Academy, which awards the Nobel Prize, recommended Blonde on Blonde when making the Nobel announcement today. She also compared Dylan's songs to the works of Homer and Sappho.
He is a great poet in the English-speaking tradition, and he embodies the tradition. And for 54 years now, he's been at it and reinventing himself.
I couldn't see.
Or as Dylan himself said, quote, I consider myself a poet first and a musician second. Well, joining us to talk more about Dylan's merit as a Nobel Prize winner is Sir Christopher Rix. He's a celebrated literary critic, professor of humanities at Boston University, former Oxford professor of poetry, and author of many books, including Dylan's Visions of Sin. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So, Professor Rix, I once read many years ago you said that a day does not go by where you don't listen to Dylan or at least think about him and his art. So I wonder if you think that it's about time that the Nobel Committee caught up to your opinion of Dylan.
Well, that was cunning of you to play sooner or later. Sooner or later, Dylan was going to get the Nobel Prize and so on. It's a long time that he has been a serious candidate for it. I admit that I differ from the person whom we heard awarding this in that I think there is a problem about simply equating poetry with song. The medium of poetry is single. The medium of poetry is language. You can set it to music and you can voice it. Dylan's art is a triangle. It's often an equilateral triangle. It's as important to it that the words be fully effective as that the voice be fully effective and that the music be fully effective. So the question, is this poetry, seems to me a real one, not because of quality or because the words of a song are somehow allowed to be less effective than the words of a poem, but because we're in the world of an art which is a compound.
So your answer to that question, is it poetry, is yes.
Well, the answer is yes and no. If by poetry you mean the immensely resourceful and imaginative use of language, well, of course, prose is just as great as poetry when it comes to that. Shakespeare is the greatest prose writer in English as well as the greatest poet. And some of the greatest things in Shakespeare are in prose. But it's fine in a way to say by poetry I mean using language wonderfully. But it does matter, I think, to me and to the artist in this case, that his is a performing art and that his voice, he made people think again about what singing was. My parents knew that Dylan couldn't sing, as they knew that Marlon Brando couldn't act. And they had to think again about what they meant by acting and by singing.
I think a lot of Brando's devotees would beg to differ.
Well, they differ from my parents. That's all right. My parents are dead. You're allowed to differ from. What I mean is that it's characteristic of great advances in the arts to make you not only see a new thing, but a new way of seeing the old thing, what singing is. I knew what people meant when they said Dylan couldn't sing. I didn't agree with them.
Well, so about Dylan's writing, about the lyric themselves. I mean, you have called his work near poetic perfection. Why is that?
I don't remember saying that, but I shouldn't take you up on that. Well, I think that, what am I going to say about that? I don't really believe that. That is, I don't believe in the use there of the word poetic. I think of myself as being rather careful not to. But I cannot think of anything that people of great gifts do with language which Dylan is unable to do. The timing of a song is controlled not by the words themselves alone. That is, there's a play, there's a draping and a shaping of cadences and of rhymes. There's timing and rhyming, and he gets to decide on the timing with which something is uttered. Whereas when you're reading it, you are directed, but you're not controlled by the words on the page.
Well, so let me probe a little deeper on this, because in your 2004 book, Dylan's Visions of Sin, you do have chapters in which you you write about the parallels or the evocations of Dylan's songs, such as Lay Lady Lay, to John Donne, I believe,
yes.
Right? And you also write about the overlap between Dylan and Keats, with Keats's Ode to a Nightingale. So let's just talk about Lay Lady Lay and John Donne. What are the parallels there?
Well, the parallels are two poems inviting women with the immense courtesy of a kind that we haven't been hearing about in newspapers lately. Two poems that are not hitting on women or propositioning women, but are inviting women into sexual delight. So Donne's poem begins, "Come, Madam, Come." Dylan's song begins, "Lay, Lady, Lay." And I think it's illuminating to ask how a poem or a song that does this manages, that takes this human impulse, manages to save it from being prurient or simply lewd. The word lewd has been back in the newspapers in the last few days. Mm-hmm. Don't hear it very often, actually. So I'm interested in works of art as humanly placing and understanding really important enduring human concerns and human situations. So these are two poems asking a woman to come to bed with them. The man asks a woman to come to bed. The medium is different, though, because the medium of Donne is words alone on a page or circulated in manuscript, a manuscript page, not actually print. The Dylan medium is immediately a voice, a male uh-huh. voice with music, and everything is coloured, not for better or for worse. It would be a little bit like thinking that a pencil drawing is somehow inadequate compared to an oil painting. No, there are certain things you can do with that medium you can't. And this is a mixed medium art. I think they're both beautiful works of art. I want to illuminate them by bringing them together, as you might bring together a colour photograph and a black and white photograph.
Well, in the break before our conversation began, I asked you what the one song you would want to hear today is, and you said without hesitation that it would be The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. We've got that here, so let's listen.
Williams and Zinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that he twirled around his diamond ring finger at a Baltimore hotel society gathering, and the cops was called in and his weapon took from him as they rode him in custody down to the station and booked Williams and Zinger for first-degree murder.
What is it about this song that you thought was perfect for the day?
Well, I think it's technically amazingly accomplished, and I'd start with the thought that T.S. Eliot had, that you cannot say at what point technique begins or where it ends. That is, the sense in which these things might be thought of as merely technical. He takes a great big decision based on the names of the two people. They both happen to have names that end, both their first name and their surname, end with unstressed final syllable. William, Zanzinger, Hattie, Carroll. So you go stress, unstress, stress, unstress. And that gives him the whole rhythm and movement of the song. All the narration in the song is feminine endings. William Zanzinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that he twirled round his diamond ring finger at a finger, not hand. Baltimore Hotel Society gathering, not society, what word not ending in ing. Then the refrain is all masculine endings. You who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears, take the rag away from your face. Now ain't the time for your tears. So it's a very, very beautiful play of one rhythm against another. And the only moment when the narration doesn't have this unstressed final syllable is got killed by a blow lay slain by a cane that sailed through the air and came down through the room. Not came down through the chamber, not got killed by a blow lay slain by a truncheon. Doesn't do that. So a life is cut off with as much casualness as if a syllable of a word were cut off. It's a very, very extraordinary accomplishment. Now, of course, it only matters because of the human compassion in the song for somebody who is no more than somewhat slow or not really slow at all at bringing a man a drink and gets hit over the head and dies of the blow. But you have something which is an intensely interesting political, social, human occasion. It's a song where you know that the woman is black without ever being told it. It's very, very extraordinary. You pick up from this song that she has to be black. And it's a terrible indictment of what America then was. Mm. You could pick this up with such confidence. It's about a rich person versus an old person. She's 51 years old and gave birth to 10 children. It's about a poor person who emptied the ashtrays on a whole other level and somebody who's on a very different social level. It's a song about power in politics. The politics of Maryland. It brings in an immense number of terrifically important and touching things, all contained with a simple decision that T.S. Eliot took in Four Quartets about the alternation of masculine and feminine endings and so on. So I think it's quite wonderful when something tiny is at one with something gigantic. I think it's a perfect song and very, very unusual to have works of art as long as the death of Hattie Carroll and be perfect.
Well, if I may ask you, because Dylan is now a Nobel laureate in literature, I wonder how much of what we respond to in his songs comes from the fact that he very consciously does borrow from some of the greatest poets of all time. I mean, we were looking back at his album Modern Times, and it seems like in virtually every song or many of the songs, he's taking directly, word for word, from Ovid, for example. Mm.
Yes, word for word, except Ovid's words aren't in English.
So, okay.
No, but it really
from
makes a difference.
A particular translation of Ovid.
Yeah, Peter Green, I think.
That's
is
right.
It? Yes. That's tricky because when it said the citation talks about his relation to the American tradition and the paragraph or two that I've written from people who've been inquiring, today, says it's more than that. I mean, that is, he knows perfectly well what it means to say of a particular bad relationship. Mine would be like Verlaine or Rimbaud and so on. I mean, that is, and it matters that it is Rimbaud, not Rambo. Though it's a rather wonderful thing that the way in which that name happens to vibrate very differently if you hear it as American as against French. I think that's absolutely true. I think I find it very illuminating to juxtapose him with the great works of literature, which he knows. But of course, he's also wonderful for the absolutely down to earth, T.S. Eliot and swanky people call demotic English. She never done nothing to William Zanzinger. Now, it matters very much that's a grammatical solecism. She never done nothing to. But that's absolutely right in the world of Hattie Carroll. Stared at the person who killed for no reason and so on, just happened to be feeling that way without warning. This is absolutely down to the ordinary English of everyday life. Then in the vicinity of phrases which are, as you say, from Shakespeare or Ovid or Keats.
Well, so as we're about to run out of time here, that makes me wonder, do you think that perhaps the Nobel Committee, I mean, if we're talking about art forms that build upon a lyric tradition that date back millennia, do you think the Nobel Committee should perhaps open itself to considering, I don't know, hip-hop artists or rap artists in future years?
Well, it's very tricky. We don't have a Nobel Prize for music.
Right.
We don't have a Nobel Prize for song. We don't have a Nobel Prize for acting, which is one of the great creative achievements. Laurence Olivier could live forever and never get a Nobel Prize because there isn't one for acting. Now, something happens. It is a delight that this has been awarded to Dylan, but we should not think of him simply as literature. His art is not, it is as vividly imaginative with words as anybody now writing in England or America, so far as I know. At the same time, it's not an art of words alone. that voice is an absolutely essential part.
Well, we'll go out with a little more of that voice. We're going to hear a little bit of Like a Rolling Stone. Sir Christopher Ricks is a British literary critic. He's a professor of humanities at Boston University, former Oxford professor of poetry, and author of Dylan's Visions of Sin. What a pleasure to speak with you today. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.